This program is brought to you by Fresh FM.
Hello and welcome. I'm Galen Pound and you're listening to Top Writers. My guest today is Bruce Gilkerson, whose book, Walking with James Hogg, The Ettrick Shepherd's Journey Through Scotland, has sparked a lot of interest worldwide. Welcome to Top Writers, Bruce. Right, now, who is James Hogg and what is his relationship to you?
Okay, he was a writer. He's lived from 1770 to 1835. He was my great-great-grandfather. A strange person in that he was an uneducated shepherd and decided to be a great writer and first had to learn to read and write.
Right, well, how did the book come about?
I was in Scotland visiting someone who is an expert in his work. She suddenly said to me, I've got an idea. Why don't you come back here and do the walks that he did through the Highlands and write a book about them? And I thought that sounded like that fitted with a lot of things I love to do. So sounds great. It took me a couple of years to decide to do it. But
right. Now, as you said, Hogg was illiterate, and that was common amongst the poorer folk of his time. How is it assumed that he learned how to read and write?
It was hard work. Where he got his inspiration, shortly after Robbie Burns had died, someone read him one of Burns' poems, and he just decided, that's what I'm going to do. I'll pick up where Burns left off. And then he said he cried because he couldn't read or write. But then he just, you know, sort of word by word, he borrowed books from the farmers where he was working as a shepherd. He also figured he should be able to write better than Burns because he had more time. Shepherds could just sit around watching sheep, whereas Burns was a ploughboy and had to follow his plough.
Now, he was really keen on Burns because they actually shared the same birthday. Well, that's what he told everybody, but it wasn't true, was it?
Quite a lot of things weren't true. That's right. One thing I learned in writing this book is often the distance between truth and fiction isn't that big. he spent his whole life assuming that he was born on the same day as Robbie Burns, and it was quite late when he found out that he wasn't. And also at that same stage, he discovered he was a couple of years older than he thought and somehow felt that he'd been robbed of 2 years, but I didn't follow the arithmetic.
Right. He's a very enterprising man. He also taught himself to play the violin and wrote a number of songs. And I think there were two volumes of songs published. And the most famous, according to Hogg in its day, was Donald MacDonald. What were his songs mainly about?
They were, that was an example. It was, at the time, there was a threat of an invasion from France, and he was suddenly feeling patriotic, and they were all strongly Scottish themes. That one he said it went through the country like wildfire, and he said, and I... In his normal, modest way, he said, I think it's the most popular song that's ever been written.
Right. Now, like you said, he was initially a shepherd, and later in life he went on to write The Shepherd's Guide, a handbook for shepherds and farmers. But like many people, I thought you just became a shepherd. But according to your book, there's actually a hierarchy you have to work your way through. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Perhaps the hierarchy was he started work at the age of six because his father went bankrupt and they got kicked out of their house, quote, without a farthing. So he had 6 months of school and then was sent out to work first as a cow hand, and cows apparently that was the first stage. You graduated up to sheep. So by the time he became a shepherd, he was feeling that he was doing pretty well.
Now, an earlier biographer described Hogg in his earlier years as highly sexed and extremely attractive to women. Can you tell us a little bit about his relationship with woman and his two illegitimate daughters and their baptism?
Yeah, maybe first I've got to say that some of his genes ran out over the last few generations. There were some bits that I wish I'd inherited that never happened. He had two daughters who, this was while he was working as a shepherd in an area not too far from where he was born. I think that one frustration for me is that I haven't been able to find descendants of those daughters. They must be somewhere, and I'm going to have another attempt when I'm in Scotland this year. What I like about this is that his relationship with those two daughters remained strong through his life and even with their families. There wasn't any pressure for him to get married. I think they saw him as not a very good prospect because he was basically an unemployed writer who was working as a shepherd. But he said he was never for a day out of favour with the families. Okay. At one stage, one of the relatives of the woman said, "Why don't you get married? Or why haven't you got married?" And he said, "Well, the weather hasn't been right recently," and then the topic never came up again.
Right. Now, when the two daughters were going to be baptised, there was some funny stuff, wasn't there, put on their birth certificates? Or?
Yes, it wasn't a very nice welcome to these two young girls. One of them was described in the church records. This is all written very officially and solemnly. "Bastard daughter of James Hogg." That was for the first daughter. The second one was described as Elizabeth in fornication. Now, this is when she's about 2 weeks old. It's very, very tough.
Very moral. Right, now one of the many things I enjoyed about the book was the background of the times that James Hogg lived in, especially about the superstitions. Now we were all raised with the tooth fairy being a nice person, but they definitely weren't the lovely little creatures we think of as today. Can you tell us, please, a little bit about the fairies and boggles and all those things?
Yes, I'd always thought fairies were good, but they were much more to be afraid of than to be, you didn't want to hang out with them. His grandfather had a reputation of being the last person in the Borders area to talk with fairies, but talking was they were out to get him. He had to flee from them. He drank quite a lot also, but I'm not sure if that's relevant. Yes, yeah, so if you were away with the fairies, you were probably taken by them, and they stole babies. And I think if anything went wrong, it was often caused by the fairies.
Right. Now, did you have any supernatural experiences on your journey?
Kind of wish I could say yes to that. One thing I know is that if I had been alive at that time, I would have totally believed all of this at the time. I'm not going to disbelieve anything, but for me, there were certainly places that I went that I thought if I'd been there earlier, I would have been very frightened, especially hearing what had happened there before. Yeah, there were places where there was a monster that he said if you even crossed its path after it had gone by, if you crossed the path before the sun had hit the monster's tracks, then your head would swell up to an enormous size and finally explode. Now, I presumably there'd been cases of that happening, but in his time. The fairies had mainly migrated further north. So the further north you were and the more into the mountains you were, the more likely some of these beings were likely to be still lurking, waiting.
Interesting. Could you please read a passage from your book now? Which one have you chosen?
Okay. Actually, one I've chosen was in in that area where that creature I was just talking about, he mentioned a little deformed monster whose head was larger than its whole body, which was sometimes seen on the tops of these mountains very early in the morning, of so baneful a nature that it was certain death to come near it or even to touch the ground where it had passed unless the sun had first shone upon it. Now that was really one of my favourite areas on my walks through the highlands, and my walks were basically following his, which were over a 3-year period, 1802, 1803 and 1804. This was a very remote area, and it turned out to be a bit more remote and a bit further away than I'd expected, partly because I'd set out to do a short trip and then had a very good idea on the way, changed my mind and decided to go through the mountains because I had a chance of meeting someone on the other side of that range. Okay. I reached the lock as light was fading. It had been a longer trip than I'd expected. Some final sunbeams slipped through big lumpy clouds. I watched them flicker and die. The greens and mauves in the hills around me grew dull. The lock glistened and greyed and matched the sky. Not a sound anywhere. The area was beautiful and sublime beyond words. I wanted to sit and watch it change until the last light was gone. But there were things I needed to worry about. The map was hopeless. Even large streams that I thought would be landmarks were not shown. I'd resorted to using my Scotland road map now. The lock was about the size of a question mark. No one knew where I was or where I was going. I wasn't so sure myself. It had been hot, my water was gone, and I'd been drinking from sources I didn't know were safe. I'd almost finished my food. I ate my sole bread roll that night, leaving half a macaroon and 3 cherry tomatoes for tomorrow. Oh yes, I should explain that I hadn't planned on spending the night out. This was an afterthought. I'd broken a pole in my beloved tent, and it might not withstand a stiff breeze. I'd nearly stood on an adder, Vipera berus. And coming from snake-free New Zealand, I know little about them. They are venomous, I knew, but do they bite to kill, and do they like exploring tents at night? And then there was the water horse and other unknown beings. Oh, that's perhaps enough, but I could mention the water horse, also known as kelpie, but they existed in just about any large body of water in Scotland at the time. And they could look like a horse, they could look like they could change their shape, they could be a charming member of the opposite sex, enticing someone away from where they'd planned to be. But they're, as he said at the time, his intents toward the whole human race are evil and dangerous. Not one to be messed around with.
Now, the book is full of wonderful anecdotes like that. What was the hardest thing about writing the book?
Getting started. I suppose, I'm sure I had days that were harder than others, but perhaps the hardest one was I set out to do what I thought was expected, which was to write about him, because he's famous, I'm not. The hardest bit perhaps was to change, because the publisher, and unusually I got accepted by the first publisher I wrote to, but the publisher said, no, not just about him, we need to know about you. And so that meant a bit of a change of focus to bring myself into the story, but that was what they wanted, and in the end that's what they got.
Right. Now, unfortunately, we're running out of time and I've got another page full of questions for you. But I ask all my guests to choose a song. And what song have you chosen today and why?
Well, I'm a bit of a Dylan freak from way back. So, the song I'm thinking of is about a journey of types. It's A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall.
By Bob Dylan.
By Bob Dylan.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain that's gonna fall. Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? And what did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw a highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept dripping. I saw a room full of men with their hammers a-bleeding. I saw a white ladder all covered with water. I saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. So guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, and it's a hard rain they're gonna fall. Oh, what did you hear, my blue-eyed son? And what did you hear, my darling young one? I heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. I heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. I heard 100 drummers whose hands were a-blazing. I heard 10,000 whispering and nobody listening. I heard one person starve, I heard many people laughing. I heard the song of a poet who died in the gutter. I heard the sound of a clown who cried in the alley. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall. Oh, what did you meet, my blue-eyed son? And who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young child beside a dead pony. I met a white man who walked a black dog. I met a young woman whose body was burning. I met a young girl, she gave me a rainbow. I met one man who was wounded in love. I met another man who was wounded in hatred. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall. And what'll you do now, my blue-eyed son? And what'll you do now, my darling young one? I'm a-going back out for the rain starts a-falling. I'll walk to the depths of the deepest dark forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty. Where the pellets of poison are flooding their waters. Where the home in the valley meets the damp, dirty prison. And the executioner's face is always well hidden. Where hunger is ugly, where the souls are forgotten. Where black is the color, where none is the number. And I'll tell it and speak it and think it and breathe it. And reflect from the mountains so all souls can see it. And I'll stand on the ocean until I start sinking. But I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, and it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Bruce. Walking with James Hogg is published by Edinburgh University Press. Where can people get a copy of it from?
As far as I know, it's not generally available in New Zealand, so you could go to Scotland to get it. But in New Zealand, through Fishpond and Book Depository, seems to, you know, the pricing seems to work out okay.
Right. Thank you so much for your time today and all the best for your future endeavours. And we look forward to another book. I'm Galen Pound and you've been listening to Top Writers, a podcast of this program. Upcoming events and information about Top Writers can be found on www.topwriters.co.nz.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this program available through funding the Access Internet Radio Project. Cheers, New Zealand On Air.